It's tempting as a manager, especially a managers who maybe aren't as well versed in development practices. It's tempting to grab onto something and say, that's my measuring stick.
Hello and welcome back to Tech and Startups, the premier growth network for technology leaders. Let's get started.
So Matthew, this is Damien, and we're working with people just explore the things that they're exploring. And you and I talked a little bit about your shifting role, the role that you've shifted into recently, and how you're becoming, you're not just an independent contributor now, but you're actually, you're a leader of the technology that's happening in your startup, and you're making some strategic decisions, and you've been talking with clients, and just wanted to explore some of the newness of that with you.
Yeah. It's like I have, because I listened to a couple other of these podcasts, and it seemed like a lot of them was, it was like somebody talking for 10 straight minutes. So I don't know if I can do that. I have a feeling that you're probably going to ask me different questions and then edit something together into something that sounds as though I just espoused wise insights for 10 straight minutes.
Yeah, we're just going to interrupt you a lot.
That sounds great to me. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'd say that's a good summary. It's like I think even if not in title, the scope of what I have been dealing with, has expanded as I've gotten more knowledgeable, and two is the like scope of what we need to be concerned about as a business has expanded. I've kind of been able to jump in and contribute into things like doing client interactions, you know, support and demos and things like that. And that's definitely not, I think, typical for people in my position. I find that, you know, most people that are in tech are really in it for the tech. I'm able to, I guess, to be a little bit broader, and that has certain advantages, I guess.
It does. So let me point this in a direction. How do you feel about that? What do you want?
What do I want? That's a hard question to answer. I want to just keep doing all the stuff that I'm doing and then some, actually. I think that's the best way to put it. I really like the novelty of jumping into new things that I have yet to conquer. And, you know, it's easy to get bored, I think, if you're doing the same things over and over again. And I think I'm just naturally very much a novelty seeker. And so I think that actually kind of helps because you kind of feel driven to whatever the next challenge is. And it's like, for me, it's like I'd never at any point had anybody saying, hey, please do client demos, or hey, you know, could you please talk with, you know, clients and doing, you know, interactive support for enterprise scale clients. That was never part of my, you know, like official job responsibilities going in, but it just seemed like an interesting enough thing to work on. And it's like, well, it seems like this could be helpful, so why don't I help? And eventually that leads to an opportunity, and eventually it leads to, turns out it works out pretty well.
Yeah. How many people are on your team right now?
Across the entire Get Clear team, it is 5 people, if you can believe
five
that.
Five people.
It's very small still. That's like, and yeah, it's like we have effectively 2 developers. You know, that's me and the CEO. And then we have an official CTO who isn't as intimately familiar with the product as one might expect, but that's okay, because he's very smart. And then we have a kind of rotating set of sales people that technically work within the larger Bonanza organization, but they do a whole lot of stuff specifically for Get Clear as well.
Yeah. And what kind of things as you're kind of growing in the role and you're like doing client demos, and especially on the enterprise level, what kind of things are you discovering that you're growing in, or is like, this is new territory?
Yeah, I think that honestly, the biggest thing, I guess maybe I'm sort of interpreting, and you can tell me this is the wrong interpretation. I am interpreting that question as something like, what's been the hardest sort of challenge in terms of adapting to something new?
Yeah, that wasn't, I think that's a good interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that's good. I think that, I guess it's technically kind of an outgrowth of everything that I've been doing already, but it's still interesting, is the sense of scaling something up coming, starting from something that is, you know, not necessarily like we, when we started working on this, this was in, just used entirely internally. So it was like, it wasn't a thing that was out there for the world. We were really using it for ourselves at that point with the hope that that would turn into something that would be customer usable. And I think that when you have something that you're just running, you know, at that type of scale, moving it up into something that is significantly larger, has larger demands, larger user base, it's challenging. I think it's something where you kind of have to learn as you go along. And the thing that you're learning at any given stage, you might realize that maybe you overlearned or underlearned something that might be useful, and having to adjust. And that's a, you know, kind of, I guess, pretty normal part of any role, but it's something where you have to really have that mindset that, you know, you're going to have to shift things and kind of, you know, you'll have to kind of bob and weave a little bit as you figure out kind of what are you doing right? What are you doing wrong? What could help you do these things better? And there's really no magic formula. There's like guidelines, that there really is no magic formula.
Yeah. And just to take a step back and set some context, because you're working on a really cool product. And because you would say, you've told me that in the past, the measurement is how many lines of code are you producing? How often are you committing? Or so this product is about measuring, would you say, proficiency of developers, of engineering teams?
The metric that we use is called line impact. And that's the idea, is that it's supposed to map into cognitive load in terms of what basically the amount of mental work that went into creating that line, which it turns out actually maps quite well, as the name implies, maps out to the impact that it had on the code base. And that is something where, I guess the way that we've been coming, that we like to explain it, is there's a lot of noise in a lot of those traditional metrics. You know, you'll have, you look at the number of commits, and like, that's obviously going to be massively different depending on the developer style. You look at lines of code, that's going to be massively different depending on the nature of the project. You know, it could be that you are updating, you know, 10,000 lines of, you know, data that is, could be done, you know, through some automated process or through a copy and paste or something like that. And then there's other things like, you look at code churn. Basically, all the other players in this space really kind of, I think, get resigned to the fact that there really isn't a single good metric out of the box that you can just look at and know that that's the thing that you want to use. There's, you know, dozens of things that they'll look at, and they'll list them all at once. Whereas we have discovered that within each of those metrics, you have something like 70% noise, 30% signal. And our chief task has been to extract the 30% of the signal that's in there. And we combine a number of different things. Like, if you have work that is spread across multiple commits, we're able to think about that in terms of one piece of work that would just never be possible using any of those other traditional metrics, because too much changes across commits. But the thing then is, like, how do you actually, you basically then take revising my thesis. Yeah. So it's like, you end up having all these different metrics that are 70% noise, 30% signal, and then you isolate the things that actually matter. And what actually happens, that we discovered is the most common pattern, is that you have certain things that just matter more or matter less or don't matter at all, potentially. And then how do you figure out what are the patterns that determine that that's going on, and how do you then map that into the line impact? And so if you have something like a copy and paste, you know, you're taking a change in one file and then you're adding it to 10 other files. In most traditional ways that you'd look at it, you'd see that as 10 novel changes. You're great. You had 10 lines of code. That's fantastically proficient. That's fantastically productive. Good job. We don't do that. We're able to detect, you know, that that's a common pattern, is that you'll see the same change spread across multiple spots in the code base. And we credit that accordingly by scaling that down. And it's been very much a process of trial and error in terms of, like, figuring out, you know, okay, what really matters, what doesn't, where is the source of the noise? Oftentimes it's like, we have a metric that actually maps up quite well with lines of code initially. And it's just been a matter of, okay, when we start with that, where do we find that there is noise? Where do we find that stuff is overcounted, undercounted? You know, and so that's something, then it's just a matter of iterating until it more closely reflects the actual sources of useful impact on the code base.
Damien, I'd love to hear you, because I know that you have thoughts about thinking about the performance of engineers. And I'd love to hear you dig in on this a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have very strong opinions borne out by a couple of decades in this field, which is, like, I agree with you, Matthew, there are no good automated metrics for software development productivity.
There is now, and it's called Line Impact. I don't know if you're listening.
Also, like, there's also an issue, a danger with there is no metric that can't be gamed. That's just inherent. That's an inherent game theory fact. So it'd be interesting to see. Like, there's a lot of ways this project can go very bad, and there's a narrow way it can go really good. So I applaud you for going down this path.
Where are you, Damien? I'd really like to. I mean, I think this is worthwhile. This is worthwhile to think about. So, what are you skeptical of specifically?
Let's take it from a really high level view instead of in the technical weeds of stuff that I don't and can't understand in our time frame. So starting from the beginning, from the cultural perspective, what are you doing with these metrics? What are they telling you? And what are you doing with that information?
The big thing, I think that the most obvious sort of idea that people get from this sort of thing is that it's going to be some sort of stack ranked thing, you know, where you're going to, you know, figure out, okay, who's my most productive developer, who's my least productive developer, and, like, you know, fire the, like, bottom 20% or whatever, and then replace them with somebody better, hopefully. And that's actually really not been the way, it's not the way that we use it, certainly. And it's not the way that we've seen anybody that's using us use it. And in fact, we've actually made a pretty steady attempt to try to downgrade the importance of the comparative metrics between developers. There's a few spots where we do show that sort of stuff, but it's in specific cases where there could be interesting trends or interesting insights about, you know, for example, a new developer. How is a new developer, you know, scaling up to working on the project? We have ways of actually doing an apples-to-apples comparison where you aren't just looking at, you know, okay, how is the developer doing in this past week relative to, you know, his or her peers, but how are they doing relative to other developers on this team in this time frame that they've been working on for so far, right? So it's like, you'll have a developer that's been onboarded for 3 months, you're curious about how they're doing, you can actually then compare them to other developers that have been there for 3 months and say, how are they doing at 3 months? And so that's a comparative metric that's a lot more interesting, I think, than just looking at a raw ranked leaderboard. And so it looks like you're trying to say something. So,
no, I mean, you dodged a huge bullet there with stack rank. So that's great. not measuring your developers along those lines. And something else, like, I want to point out, if you have a new developer and it's taking them a long time to get ramped up on your code base, the problem is not the developer. The problem is the code base. I'm going to say that as a statement of fact.
It's quite true. I can say from a lot of experience, that's quite true.
And so if you have a metric that tells you that, well, then the thing you can do with that information is go, okay, what are we doing in our code base that makes it so hard to bring in new developers?
Yes. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because we have been branching increasingly into that realm as well, about being able not just to look at developers, but look at the code base. One of the areas that we have covered in terms of like being able to talk about that is we have a repository directory browser, so you can actually see where work has gone in your repository over whatever time frame you choose. And during that, during whatever time frame you're looking at, we can actually show you not just where the biggest impact directories and files have been, but then also the relative velocity of changes that have happened into those directories. And so if you find, you know, you onboard a developer, they're 3 months in, and you say, okay, maybe they're not quite performing as well as other developers at 3 months, what's going on? You'll generally find that if you look at the repository browser, you'll see, okay, they've been working on, it looks like a lot of front-end code. It looks like even though a massive chunk of work has been done in the front-end chunk of the project, it has one of the lowest line impact velocities. And so that means that for a given minute that a developer is working on a particular part of the code base, they are getting much less done per minute based on line impact. And so then you could say that could be a really good refactor opportunity. That could even be something where you could have that new developer work on that, because it's like, hey, you've been diving into this and you've probably seen a lot of the pain of getting ramped up in this. So is it possible maybe that this could be a project that you could take on that could improve the whole team's proficiency?
That sounds really brilliant. Finding the pain points and going, oh, this thing keeps hurting people. Let's fix it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what you said though about, it's like a lot of times, you know, if a developer is not productive, it's much, not very often is it the developer's fault. Most of the time it's the code base's fault, especially if you have, if you have particularly like if a candidate interviews well, they, you know, by all accounts seem to be a good fit for the team. And then they just, something is not quite working once they're actually on the ground. That's a big sign that the first place you should be looking is in the browser and not in the comparative metrics.
Yeah. I always, like I said, if a developer is having a problem, the problem isn't the developer, it's the code base. But I guess it could be your interview process. Your interview process could be broken also.
Then that's a thing that's much harder to measure. And like we've tried to do, some very basic mapping of, you know, different processes and questions into actual results. But we are a small company. And so like the sample size is so small. It's like, you know, if you hire somebody and they don't turn out very well, it's like, well, what question was it? Because, you know, 95% of these questions we asked to other candidates and it couldn't quite, it may not be the 5%. It may have been that maybe we just lucked out with the other candidates and maybe all of our questions suck. It's like, you just don't really know.
I mean, I do have a great process that is borne out through experience and has amazing theory behind it as to developer interviews. But that's not what we're talking about today, I think.
I'm interested to hear it sometime.
I would be happy to talk about it, yeah.
That sounds interesting.
Matthew, I'm wondering if there's anything else. I find this idea of line impact pretty compelling and would generally agree that there haven't been fantastic metrics.
I agree.
They've been poorly used or poorly applied. And so you have this cool metric. I'm wondering, Damien was I think pointing at, and you talked about a little bit, the fear of being evaluated on something that might not be, it's tempting as a manager, especially a managers who maybe aren't as well versed in development practices. It's tempting to grab onto something and say, that's my measuring stick. And I just wonder how you would advise managers using this metric, and generally speaking, who might be tempted to go, this is my measuring stick of ultimate measuring stick of performance, and I'm going to hire, fire, and promote based on this.
Yeah. And I think that the idea about kind of the one holistic measuring stick that just works for everything, it really is quite tempting. And we've had different teams actually ask us about sort of like, what's the recommended amount that you would want to use line impact within your internal team processes. And we have actually kind of given an answer that comes pretty close to what we've talked about here, which is basically the most important things you're going to get out of it are not necessarily going to be in the realm of like, who do you promote, who do you fire, whatever, because inherently those are just such complicated decisions that you can't really isolate it down to one metric. But it's in the realm of, if you have a team, you want to get the most out of that team, or you have a code base, you want to get the code base developing as quickly as you can and as effectively as you can. How do you get there? And so that's like, being able to, like, one thing that we offer is the ability to break down your code into various code categories based on things that we can detect from the project structure. Then we're able to map that into showing particular domain experts and relative percentiles across the team. And so a lot of that is then if you have a project that's going to be, you know, potentially very deep into a certain area of the code, who would be a great fit to take that on? And so then you might say, okay, this is going to be a very, ORM database heavy.
Mm-hmm. Or even mentor in that area, right? Like, who would be a great fit to mentor new people? Like, oh, that's my, I know who's strong. How are we going to strengthen the bench? Who's going to be the coach in that area?
You took the example right out of the one I was going to give next. No. It's great minds think alike, as they
I got say. So excited, Matthew. I couldn't hold back.
this is a sign that the things are working as intended, because the positive uses of this should just be so intuitive, you know, that just hear about it and these ideas should come to them.
I love that idea that you can use this to figure out, like you're saying, like, oh, who could be my mentors in this area? Or as you said earlier, what part of the code base could maybe use a refactoring glance, right? What should we be looking at when we have that time to get out our technical debt? You know, where are the places that we can invest in? Some shortcut rather than, a lot of times we ask, what's your gut on this? We ask our team, what's your gut on this? What's your gut? We ask our leaders, what's your gut on this? And there is value. There is certainly value in the gut feelings. It's nice if we have some other things to look at alongside it to validate.
I have literally been on teams where we had problematic parts of the code and everybody struggled with it. So nobody knew who the expert was because we all struggled. There was an expert, but they didn't know they were the expert because it was hard for them. Yeah. I love what you said earlier about, like, there is no holistic measurement. Like, management is hard. And that's not going to change. And it would be lovely. Every manager wants, like, that one tool that's going to measure things and tell them what to do and make their lives easier. And no, sorry. That's not how the world works. That's not what it's like working with people. But here's a tool that can help you. It's not the tool. And your job is still going to be hard and fuzzy and messy. And you can still screw it up.
I think a lot of the skepticism, I can say from experience, the biggest source of skeptics of our product has been from actual developers themselves, that for the reasons that you're talking about, they're used to managers, you know, isolating, you know, like one or two things that they really care a lot about. And they're like, okay, you're in the bottom chunk of this, what's happening here, blah, blah, blah. It's definitely, I think, the other piece, and this is much harder to get at, and I think it's something that probably is somewhat already occurring, but I think that the idea with our tool is that it would hopefully actually accelerate this change, is moving towards something that is a little bit more, like, truly holistic, that you're looking at all elements of what's going on in your development process, that you're willing to know that anything that you're going to look at is going to be imperfect, and thus the idea should not be to try to get the one perfect thing or anything like that. It should be to always be iterating towards something better, right? And that's often where we've gotten the biggest traction and where we've gotten the best response from developers has been in emphasizing this is a tool that will help people do their jobs, including your jobs, better. And so that's a pretty big selling point that we've started to notice gets more traction. We do definitely notice occasionally, particularly for, I would say, not quite as tech-oriented managers, that they are very interested in the sort of idea of using this tool for personnel management in that kind of very direct, heavy-handed way. And we've really had to, I guess, like, We've personally discouraged it. Obviously, we can't control how any individual team is going to use a tool like ours. But we've emphasized that element less in our marketing. We've emphasized the idea about iterating towards a better team, a better code base, more finding domain experts, you know, finding areas of the code that could use improvements in a way that actually then reflects on the ground reality. That's the other thing too, is that a lot of times if you see tools that analyze your code and spot improvement opportunities, it's always based on like, okay, how many if statements does this method have or something like that? And it's like, that's also a very crude metric. That's probably going to be 70% noise, you know? And so we actually look at what's actually slowing people down the most. And, you know, that can be the bigger informer about, you know, even if it's something where you have to think about why development is so slow in that area, you at least can see from without going, just going by crude metrics or intuition, you can actually see, okay, what's actually slowing people down.
Amazing. Let's take a moment here. We'll start to wrap it up. Matthew, the name of the project, the company again is?
It's Git Clear.
Git Clear, G-I-T, like GitHub, right? Git Clear.
And the very same, yes.
Mm-hmm, because you're looking at the commits, right? To Git, you're looking at Git commits usually.
Yeah, and I guess we technically do support like Mercurial because we integrate with Bitbucket that at least until July supports Mercurial. You know, officially, like I think just about, you know, 95%+ of the civilized development world now is on Git.
those are some heavy words.
Shots fired.
Well, I think this is fantastic. I love the implications of this. And I got to tell you, Matthew, if Git Clear doesn't have you creating videos and content around how might we consider evaluating our employees, how can we make decisions about where we should be focusing our code base, where is the impact, the best impact, who should be mentoring who? I mean, where was it at the beginning? Where is it now?
That's a good tip for me, actually, in the sense that it's like now I feel a little bit more inspired to at least, you know, like record, write something that can hype this up, you know. I think that would be very useful. It's just this stage in the project, it's all about just getting the word out and getting people familiar with us.
Lead the way, lead them into the world of Git Clear.
Yeah, man. And you're one of the, I mean, honestly, as a person who's been probably, as a developer who's been the victim of people exactly the things that Damien people like him might feel apprehensive of, it seems like you're a fantastic voice for this. So thank you so much for sharing with us what you're working on. And there's a lot of beautiful, you know, philosophy, age old philosophy. Since the dawn of the computer, we have wondered, how should we measure but not kill our developers and our work? How should we look into refactoring the code base? So thanks so much for sharing that.
Thanks for being here, Matthew.
Thanks a lot for having me, guys. I really enjoyed it. And hopefully this can turn some heads.
We've gotten some fantastic insights on strengthening your team. But what about other ways you can strengthen your team? I've assembled an 8-page guide on the 4 quadrants of strengthening your team, with key insights from more than 11 veteran tech team leaders. To get yours, grab the link below this video. I'm so glad you joined us today. If this video was helpful, give it a like, go ahead and subscribe and hit the bell so that tech and startup videos continue to show up in your feed. I'll see you in the other videos.